The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Emma Doran is the host of the Keep It Tight podcast. She's a gigging comedian. She is now an author because the first book is just out. That book being Mad, Isn't It? I tell you what, Emma, you didn't hold back in the first book.
I didn't, but there's a good few pages to fill. So I was like, I better just be honest.
Open your soul and let it all out on the page.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it challenging to cover? Because you talk about your early relationships, you talk about your pregnancy when you were in school, you talk about all sorts of fierce, intimate stuff. Did you have any trepidation?
No, I didn't at the start. Now, I have never done therapy, and that is something I regret now. So when you start writing, and then you have to go into lots and lots of detail, because with stand-up, you'd be vulnerable on stage, but with stand-up, it's always get to the punchline as fast as possible. But with a book, it's like, no, well, what happened? Go back to that bit. What happened in the middle there? So
were you triggered?
I was. My own mother texted me when in the middle of it, kind of, I'd had a cold, and she was like, oh, how are you feeling today? And when I looked at the message, my eyes immediately rolled up. I was like, oh, what does she want? And then I was like, I had to pull myself back. I was like, oh my God, I'm regressing. Because I'd been in my teenage years for like that whole week. And I was like, all right, I need to cop on. So I
your teenage years, they're
ooh,
covered. They're,
yes.
They were hard.
Oh, they were great.
I don't mean yours specifically,
yeah,
but it reminds you of how difficult it is just to be a teenager.
Yes.
There's a lot to navigate.
There is a lot to navigate. It's so, I think the social pecking orders and all that kind of stuff, it's so complex, and you're not even vocalizing it, but you all know exactly where each other stand on any given day. And it's so movable as well. And your hormones and yeah. I mean, I gave it a good go. You know, I suppose I went out of my teens with a bang because when I was 18, then I was pregnant. So that was kind of, you know, I really finished it off in style.
You have a breakdown of a teenage girl coolness points system.
Yes.
That includes things like overall looks, which scores a 5. Fashionable school shoes, the bigger the heel, the better. Usually that only scores a 3. An older boyfriend, 2 extra points if he had a mop head, double points if he has a car, but 10 as a basic if you have an older boyfriend.
Yes.
It's a very difficult life to live. And apparently you have to be a small bit of a bitch, but not too bitchy.
Yes. Nobody likes a goody-goody two-shoes. You know what I mean? A little bit of a bitch, but not like a total bitch.
So explain to me then, I don't mean the mechanics, I understand that bit, how you ended up pregnant in leaving certain school.
Yes. You do. So
this is a central part of the book. I'm not prying into your personal life.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. I think what happened was before I went into sixth year, you know, secondary school, it's a long old slog and you're a very different person from first year by the time you get into like senior cycle. And I was dying for a bit of glamour, a bit of action, something going on. And as the first point of call, I convinced my friend, let's move down to Corktown for a summer and get jobs. Now, that was the start of the plan. We were going to do London, Ibiza, you know, travel the world.
You say in the book that at the time your expectation was that Corktown would be like the TV show Is Harry on the Boat about Ibiza reps. Turned out not to be the same.
I didn't have that much experience of Corktown. And of course, it's just a lot of Dublin parents shouting at children, eat your burger, eat your burger, leave that. So no, it was very colourful, very enjoyable. But I did get pregnant in about 4 days. So the grand plans for travelling the world and living a glamorous, exciting life stopped fairly lively. And I went back to Dublin because I had to finish school anyway. And then within a couple of weeks of starting sixth year, I was like, uh-oh, I'm pregnant. And
as if the leaving cert was not challenge enough.
I mean, when I was lucky enough to go on and have more children and I wasn't doing the leaving cert, I was like, this is grand. I was like, this is fine. So yeah, wouldn't advise it.
Although on the flip side, it is very efficient to have your child when you're 18, because then by the time you're, 38, you have a 20-year-old who is largely self-sufficient and you're out the gap.
Well, it's very true. Now, we did have a little sweet spot where we had a babysitter when she was kind of old enough and before she had her own social life. And my brother said to me, it's like you planned the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, It's like I planned the whole thing. But yeah, she's 21 now. She has her graduation from UCD on Friday, a degree in psychology. So I'm hoping for free meds or something. My little pension plan better strike up gold. So yeah, it actually, you know, everything did work out well in the end.
You mentioned your brother. This is the brother, one of the brothers who was so instrumental in your later life by torturing you as a teenager and has subsequently got all of the love and credit from your mother that you deserve.
Of course.
Is he aware that this is how you view him? Because it's in the book quite a bit.
I don't think he'll be shocked. But yeah, brothers with mothers are very different. Like, you could be moving a wardrobe with your mother as the daughter, and the son would text, "How are you, Madge?" "Oh, he's very good. He's very good." And daughters are always flagged in to do the trips to the pharmacy and IKEA, and they're the confidant. "I wouldn't want to tell your brother, I'd only worry him," you know, that kind of thing. But we're a very happy family, all of us.
So you then describe how, having achieved the Leaving Cert and a small child almost simultaneously, you then decided that the ideal career to go into was stand-up.
I know.
Would you not have thought about being an accountant or the civil service?
Well, you know, I tried. I tried office jobs. I really gave it a good go. But I found with office jobs, after about 6 months, that's when I started to get the itch. You know the way when we're doing a whip around for Sheila, who's retiring? Do you want to be in on the lotto? You know what I mean? Everyone's standing around the one kettle. Who's brought in fish? There's a certain point in office jobs I start to lose my mind. So yeah, I went into, I think I just had a little, well, not I think, I know. I always had some sort of niggle desire to do something creative. But the great thing about stand-up is you don't need any qualifications. Anyone can do it. Nobody asks, "Have you gone to the Gaiety School of Acting? Who's your mom? Did you do Panto with Twinning?" No one cares. So it is actually so accessible. You can go along. And as well, with kids, you're doing it in the evening. You're only on stage for the max is an hour. It's a short shift. It does have its benefits. Now, when I told like everyone close to me that I was starting stand-up, they did think I was going mad. Like, they thought I was having a breakdown. But yeah, I think it was a way that I could do something creative, and it is all the, like, it is weirdos and, you know, socially
awkward. And the audience or on stage?
Well, on stage mostly, but kind of both. But you know what I mean? You're there doing a gig when there's a massive match on, you know, when other people are watching like the big Premier League match that night, and like, we're like, what's going on? We're like, you know, we're kind of weird people. So
the thing that I can get your logic of saying that it has the flexibility. You don't have to. You don't have to have previously worked with Twink. There's a lot of advantages to it.
Yes.
But at the same time, there is a level of personal exposure. If you have a bad day in the office, there are colleagues and it can be their fault.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like team sport. They were involved versus boxing. It's just me.
Yes.
That pressure, like being up there with nothing but just you and a mic. First couple of times, it must be very difficult.
Well, yeah, the first couple of times, it is very strange. Like, I remember the first time I did it, I did turn up, you know, hours early, and was like, "I'm here to do stand up," and they're like, "Yeah, great, good for you." And actually, my friend reminded me that when I was finished my first set, I just walked off stage. I didn't know how to like end. I was just like, and just like stumbled off stage. But the thing about being vulnerable on stage is it's actually so freeing. Because you do get to a point now, in one way it's bad because your filter is broken, but you do get to a point where you divulging the terrible things that have happened to you are great comedy. So you learn to just like, you've no...
And do you actually do that? Because I've always been curious as to whether comedians do a persona that seems like vulnerability, or do you actually mine your own bleakest moments?
If you use stuff that's true, it's actually so much easier. So I do tend to use stuff that's true. Now, it might be kind of heightened or whatever, you know, because I do a bit at the moment about being on Ireland's Fittest Family, and my auntie was part of the team. Now, she...
Were you on Ireland's Fittest Family?
Yes.
Were you?
Yes.
Who was your coach?
My coach was Davey Fitz.
But
A lot of shedding, but I think it was just because we were the only family that were smaller than him. So he was kind of like, "I'll go with them." But he's nice. I have a little Jack Russell at home, so I felt very comfortable with him. But anyway, I talk about that. And my auntie was on our team. Like everyone else had brilliant people. Not that my auntie's not brilliant. Sorry. I had real family members is what I'm trying to say.
Say the rest are ringers.
100%. And I'll stand in court and say that. I've no problem saying that. Everyone happened to have cousins who were like firefighters and had done a couple of marathons. But my auntie is in her, I won't say what age, but I talk about her. And it's all true, but there is... It's slightly, you know, heightened for a stage. I'll say that. That's a warning to her.
I'm suspecting that the answers to this will be not well, given the way that you've set it up. But how did you do?
We came with spirit and might, and we were there for charity, and we were there for the right reasons.
So you are going to be launching the book with Deirdre O'Kane in conversation, the two of you, Sunday the 15th of September in the Sugar Club, and tickets are on easons.com. The book title, I should say, Mad, Isn't It? So you'll be talking about Mad, Isn't It? With Deirdre O'Kane. Do you know Deirdre O'Kane, and do you aspire to be like her as a comedian? Because she's up there in the success terms.
Oh, well, she's the top dog. She's the queen. I aspire to be... to be her in the sense that she has the confidence to wear sunglasses inside. Like she's proper showbiz. And I feel like if I could get to that level of confidence that I would be comfortable. I mean, I find
that's almost the Bono level.
Yeah, almost. That is the Bono level. But she is absolutely mental. She's great fun to be around. And yeah, she's an absolute superstar.
And she is joined by the great and the good all over the cover of the book. Amy Huberman, packed full of spirit, life lessons, love and laughs. I didn't want it to end. Joanne McNally, one of the funniest humans I've ever encountered. And Deirdre O'Kane up on the front saying, a must read. So all of your peers think it's very good. What did the family make of it?
Oh, yes. So the family, I actually only gave it to my parents there the other day. Because there have been an ongoing talk for a couple of weeks ago. Oh, no, like I have it. I will give it to you and I will. And you, and yeah, when you must and whatever. So I think there was trepidation on both sides. But I know that they're really, and my dad, I saw them last night, but my dad had phoned me the day before to say he loved it and he's really enjoying it and whatever. So if Daddy Doran approves, it's fine. Because I mean, all of this is all about my father's approval anyway. So now I'm fine with everything.
And you didn't mind the knowledge that your parents were reading the slightly more intimate bits?
No.
Or did you remove them? Were they redacted before the parents got the book?
No, anything that was redacted was only for legal reasons. But everything has stayed in because I feel like when you go through a teenage pregnancy and you have a very supportive family, you immediately shift into that zone of your relationship with your parents is now you're an adult child. You know the way some people never maybe move past that point, like, well, I couldn't tell my mother that. She doesn't know I do that and whatever, you know, spray deodorant on myself after having a smoke because mum doesn't know I smoke and Jesus, what would you say? So we got rid of all that very early on. So we would be quite open, like obviously not as open as the book, but hopefully they'll feel free to just, I'll just skip that page.
Pages.
Yeah. Pages. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Pages. Yeah.
The book is titled Mad, Isn't It? The author is Emma Doran. And as I say, Emma's going to be in conversation with Deirdre O'Kane for the launch of Mad, Isn't It? On Sunday, the 15th of September in the Sugar Club. And if you want tickets, you can get them at easons.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.